Okay, for those of you who have been waiting a significant amount of time, we are beginning our Alzheimer's Demonstration Grants to States teleconference today, and apologize once again for our call-in number. On today's call, we will be focusing solely on the Alzheimer's Demonstration Grants to States program announcement. We will have two primary speakers on our call. Our first speaker will be our friend, Lori Stahlbaum, from the Alzheimer's Demonstration Grants to States Project Director. She's with the Administration on Aging, and many of you know her and are familiar with the work that she has done over the past few years to really solidify this program. Also on our call is Meredith Eisenhart, who works with Lori Stahlbaum in the Administration on Aging Alzheimer's Demonstration Grants to States Program office. She is the project coordinator. Our second speaker will be Diane Bronstein, who is the Director of Technical Assistance for the Alzheimer's Demonstration Grants to States Resource Center. The majority of this call will be run by Ms. Lori Stahlbaum. Before we begin our call, we are going to do a quick roll down of states, just to do a roll call of states. To be very clear, what we would like is for, as we roll call each state, we just would like to hear a yes, somebody from your state is here, or no, that will be a blank silence on the line. So I'm going to begin with the state of Alabama. If somebody from Alabama can say here.
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 Thank you.
Alaska. Arizona. Arkansas. California. Colorado. If those of you who are on the line are stuck on mute, to unmute your line to let us know if you're on the call, press pound 6. Okay, again, going state by state. Anybody from Colorado? Connecticut? Delaware?
Here.
District of Columbia?
Here.
Florida? Is that a yes, Florida? Georgia?
Here.
Hawaii? Idaho?
Yep.
Illinois? All right, we have a little bit of feedback. Whomever is on a cell phone, could please press star 6 to mute your line. Illinois?
They're here.
Indiana? Iowa? Kansas?
Here.
Here. Sorry.
Kansas, you said you were here. Kentucky? Louisiana?
Here.
Maine?
Here.
Maryland? Massachusetts? Michigan? Minnesota?
Here.
Missouri? Mississippi?
Here.
Here.
Nebraska? Montana. Anybody on the call from Montana? Okay, Nebraska, you said you're here?
Yes.
Nevada?
Here.
New Hampshire? New Jersey? New Mexico?
Here.
New York? North Carolina?
Here.
North Dakota? Ohio? Oklahoma, Oregon, Pennsylvania,
here,
Puerto Rico, Rhode Island, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas,
yes,
Utah, Vermont, Virginia?
Here.
Washington State? West Virginia? Wisconsin? Wyoming? Okay, if anybody was on pound mute, if you had not had your opportunity to chime in for your state, please let us know. Okay, fantastic. Thank you all for joining us. I'm going to pass the microphone over to Lori Stahlbaum, our mistress of ceremonies for today's program announcement call. Lori?
All righty. Hi, everybody. Okay, this is Lori.
First, I want to just kind of say a few things, and then I'm planning to have sort of a list of what I think are some key points that we should touch on before we just open it up to some questions and things. So first, since I'm the project officer for AOA on the Alzheimer's Demonstration Grants Estates program, this means I'm your main contact for programmatic and regulation-type questions. So I want to make sure if you don't have it handy, my direct phone number is 202-357-3452. And if for some reason I'm not available, please feel free to call Meredith. Her direct number is 202-357-0149. If I'm not around, I'm probably with Meredith, or Meredith knows where to find me. So because I know we're running on a tight timeline, I just want to make sure you have as many contact numbers as you can. And then, of course, you saw it in the program announcement, but I want to reiterate it before we start. If you're looking for some resources or existing tools or information about what other states have done, then I hope you will call the Resource Center. But to make sure that Diane's phone doesn't ring off the hook, we put in a main number in the program announcement for the Resource Center, which is 202-393-7737. You call that number, and they'll make sure you're connected with whomever can best answer your questions, meet your needs. It might likely be Diane, but at least there's a central system or something like that.
Yes, what I was going to say, if you don't mind, is we would just be delighted to hear from anybody and to help anybody in any way we can. Just identify yourself as you have a technical assistance question about the ADDGS program, and our receptionist will be able to route it to the right place that way. Thank you.
Now, one of the things to start with is through this call with questions you might have, and when you contact us, all of us, me, Meredith, even Resource Center staff, basically what we are allowed to do is guide you. So the Resource Center can say, here's some tools, here's some resources. I can say, yes, that fits within the guidelines of the program. But we can't really say, yes, you should do that, or no, you shouldn't do that. So you might get frustrated with us sometimes. But ultimately, the final decisions about what you do or don't do have to fall on your shoulders and your partners. Okay, so I'm going to go through my list of things that seems to have gotten longer the longer I thought about it, but hopefully this will be helpful, and then we can move on to questions or Diane or however we do it from there. So I figure the first thing is you probably all noticed these are one-year grants. There's no option for a three-year project. All the applications are for 1 year only, and this is strictly because of funding availability. Right now we can only guarantee funding for 1 year, so we are only offering one-year projects. As it says in the program announcement, we estimate we should be able to award up to 23 new projects with federal funding levels between $250,000 and $325,000. We currently have we'll have 9 continuation states, and then hopefully at least 23 more. So we'll have, you know, hopefully 32 projects running as of July 1st minimum. Or maximum, whatever. Anyway, and with that money, it is our assumption that some of your funding, hopefully not a lot, but that's up to you again, but will probably be needed because of the new data collection requirement. And I'll talk about that a little bit more later. Following the deadline confusion, I just want to reiterate the deadline is Monday, May 14th. And we are requesting that applications be submitted through grants.gov. So you want to make sure, even if you've used grants.gov in the past, make sure all your passwords and everything are up to date, because we found out once the hard way with a continuation grantee that apparently I think it's passwords or registries expire. I'm afraid I'm not totally knowledgeable about grants.gov. But if you're not sure or you need some help, we do have a person at AOA. Her name is Yixin Yan, which is capital Y-I dash capital H-S-I-N. That's her first name, Yixin. Her last name is Yan, Y-A-N. And she's wonderful, and she can absolutely help you with any questions or concerns.
Do you have her number, Laurie?
Yeah, I'm coming to that. Question.
To let you know, I am trying to submit a grant on grants.gov, and I can't get through my this is Jane in Iowa. I cannot get through my password or identification. They keep saying I'm doing it wrong. So it
may be that it's expired.
Yeah,
because
I know.
Things have to be
nobody. I can't get anybody to respond to me.
Have you called? Well, Yixin.
Is Arthur no longer there?
Arthur Miller is no longer at AOA.
Oh, okay. So
Yixin is the person who now helps and knows and keeps up with grants.gov.
Okay.
Her direct number is 202-357-3436. So, I mean, you can hear from Jane. I know with grants.gov, different people in the States, different people have different capabilities, accessibilities, or permissions, or whatever. You may want to just check with whomever that is and make sure that everything
they're
is up
still part of it.
Yeah, well, that they're still there, but that everything is up to date, because it can take, even if you have some of the information there, my understanding is it can take a couple of days to re-register. I'm using the wrong words, and this is from my ignorance. So,
CCR registration is required once a year.
Right, and that can take...
That expires, but as far as passwords and authorized users and stuff, we never got that impression here in Iowa, but that's what I'm trying to find out the last 2 days, if they do expire, and what can I do to re-sign up, whatever.
Right, and on the AOA website, under the grants about grants program section, there is information on grants.gov, and et cetera, but this is why I'm bringing it up, because in the midst of all the things you're trying to pull together right now, you just want to make sure that the grants.gov access is working, and May 11th is probably too late to find out if it is or not. So that's just something. And if you have trouble reaching Yixin or something, you know, you can always call me or Meredith, and we can try to parlay, but Yishin's there every day, so it shouldn't. Hopefully, you won't have any problems. Okay, so then going more into the pieces of the program and etc.
Yes. Have questions now, or should we hold questions?
Well, I was thinking we'd wait till the end, but I don't know. Anybody think?
I would vote for waiting for the end of your presentation personally.
Me too. Okay, well then, I guess we'll wait, because maybe I'll hit it, and just take notes, and then I won't get sidetracked, which I digress can happen a lot. Some of you may have been in the program in the past, and some of you may be in the program now, but a requirement that came into the program announcement in fiscal 2005. Which probably most of you have not seen prior to now, is the requirement that project directors must be allocated 25% of their time to overseeing this project. So this is at the state level. This is the agency that we award the grant to. Now, to clarify, the project director doesn't necessarily have to be a full-time state employee. They can be a contractor hired by the state to fulfill the position, but they have to be affiliated with the state agency. We have states, because there's, you know, there can be a lot of places aren't hiring new people, or people are already 100% billable, but it is a requirement, and you will want to show that in your budget proposal in some way that the person who runs this project will be committing 25% of their work time to coordinating the work of this project. As in the past, half of the federal funds, just the federal funds, have to be used for one, at least one of the six direct services that are identified in the Alzheimer's program law. To just say them here, the six forms of direct service are home health care, personal care, daycare, companion services, short-term stays in overnight facilities, and other respite, which is a bit of a broad category. I always say this, please note that case management under the Alzheimer's demo program is not a direct service. It is, the direct services are only those six items I just named. Case management, I mean, is important, and it can be provided through the program, but it has to be, it would have those funds, that would have to be funded through the other half of the federal money or through match money or et cetera. But it cannot be considered part of the direct service dollars. And then in terms of the administrative services, this is a little, I think, under this program, it's a little bit different than what I think most people are used to. Because under this program, staff, like coordinating volunteers or attending advisory council or committee meetings, things like that are not considered administrative services. It's on page 11 in my program announcement, but there's a box, big box, takes up almost the whole page. It's called Special Requirements of the Alzheimer Demonstration Program, and it talks about the direct service, I think, and the administrative services, and it states that the administrative services are things more like getting contracts finalized or pushing them through your state contracting system, personnel management functions like timesheets and stuff, and filling out financial forms. Those are the types of things considered administrative services under this program. So while it's no more than 10% of your grant, total grant, not just federal, but federal and non-federal, can be used for administrative services, that doesn't mean the project director's time is considered administrative services. So I hope that helps a little bit. Now, some of the things that we've built on from the last program announcement and or added, for instance, is in this time around, we're expecting that all applicants will work with their Aging and Disability Resource Center if there is one or some in your state, or if there's not some other single point of entry system that's operating in your state. So if you don't have an ADRC, it's okay. You can work with some other system. And, of course, if you have an ADRC, I would recommend at least trying to partner with them. And we do understand that not all ADRCs, Aging and Disability Resource Centers, I think it's in the third year of the program, so different states' ADRCs are at different places. So the level of your collaboration or their ability to collaborate and work with you may be different. It may be, in some states it may be just being on an advisory council. In other states it might be really providing some training. So you need to talk with your ADRCs. And we did include a web link to the ADRC Technical Assistance Center, which I hope will help you identify resources. But, again, that would be a great, if you're not sure, that I think Diane or someone in her group could probably help you hone in on where they are or if they are in your state. One of the new things for this year, completely new, in the past we've had we requested partnering with ADRCs. This year we're requiring working with some sort of single point of entry system for the ADRC. This year we're requiring that some of your direct Alzheimer's demonstration grant defined direct services, some of those six, have to be offered using a consumer-directed model. This doesn't mean you have to provide all of your services using consumer-directed model. It says some, not all, just some. And then, as in a couple years past, we want to continue having you try to link with other programs and services in your state that support family caregivers, in particular the National Family Caregiver Support Program, but there are, I'm sure, other relevant activities going on in your state that may be more preferential to you or what have you, and that's okay. But from where I work, AOA, the National Family Caregiver Support Program, always leaps to mind. Now, about the data collection. This is new, and we're still actually waiting for the final approval of the data collection, permission to collect the data, and et cetera. We've gone through, I guess at this point we're about three-quarters, four-fifths of the way through. So it is my belief that we will have approval, the final approval, before the grants start on July 1st. What we're waiting for now is final comment from the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, at the Department of Health and Human Services. They're the ones who give us the number to put on our papers. So we're waiting for our number. So once we get that approved, as soon as possible, then I'm going to put a contract in place to set up a reporting program for grantees. And it, in my mind, and based on focus groups we held last year and input we got from around the country, we really do visualize this will be a system that's accessible in a variety of different ways, because we are aware that, again, states are at different levels of capability in terms of data collection. There's not going to be any customized the old data collection program, if anyone was in that, was much more intensive and I think involved a specific database. And we're going to work to build the database that allows you to submit the information to us. For those of you, if you're in the state unit, I think it's sort of like the NAPIS, but I don't know what it stands for, so don't ask me. But it's something that states use to submit data to AOA now. We're also going to, with this contract, make sure that there's training and support available to you, so that, you know, while right now it's a little vague because it's in process, but in my mind and in as soon as we get approval, the actions I'm going to be taking are to facilitate hopefully as simple as possible, data entry formats for you, for getting the information to us, and then making sure there's training and support available so you're not just out there going, oh, okay, now what do I do? So there'll be a sort of twofold purpose to the contract. Well, and of course, because I want to try to make it user friendly, but that I hope goes without saying. So my main point is, as you're thinking about your plan, remember to incorporate the data elements. For instance, if you have client forms, I mean, you don't have to show that in your proposal, but think about that you'll want to start collecting this kind of these data things that we show on the spreadsheet or in the sample client intake form template as soon as you start having clients come into your program. You don't have to use the client intake form that we provide in the attachments. That we just did that as a template to sort of say, for the elements we want collected on the clients, this is what it would look like on your form. You can take that and cut and paste it into your form. You can use it. You can throw it away and never look at it again. Well, once you've put the elements into your form, that is, of course. But those are there as a reference. None of those forms that were included as attachments are required. Those are just to give you sort of different visuals of what you'll be expected to collect. I think that's all on data for the moment. Well, coming back to sort of the funding too, thinking about, so it's my belief that, you know, you may have to, someone's time will be somewhat taken up by the data, so there may be, in terms of the funding levels, there may be budgeting needed to pay the person who's going to kind of keep track of it all. And it is my intent with the system that it won't necessarily have, the data reporting system, that it won't necessarily have to come from the state, I mean, in my imagination, but from what we've talked to people about, I think this is feasible, preferably maybe a web-based system or multiple kinds of systems, where your partners could hopefully enter in the information as well. So it's to try to minimize the layers and the levels, but then it, ultimately it's up to each state if you want your partners to send the information to you and you submit it, et cetera. But I am trying to take into account multi-level data reporting, so it's not only these people can do it, so just something to think about. Yeah, I think that's all I can remember about data right now. And then, as in the past, we have the requirement that you cite evidence-based research. This does not mean you have to implement evidence-based research. It means cite it, like in a research paper. You know, we want to do this because blah, blah, blah. So-and-so study from this journal of such-and-such showed yada, yada. It was a great study. I remember it well. So you want to cite it. I mean, we do have some states that are implementing evidence-based research, but it is not a requirement. And there's the way the reviewer scoring is set up. Don't believe you get extra points for doing that. So but you do want to at least reference one, I think at least one study that you use to inform your ideas. Now, just to reiterate on the Resource Center, because I got to go through my list so I don't get sidetracked, I really hope you will contact them. They've got a lot of great stuff and ideas and contacts and information, and I'm sure that whoever you are connected with will be extremely helpful. But now, if you're already working on something, if you already have a program or if you have something that you've worked on in the past, then it's good. You don't need to change your program, but you do need to enhance or expand it beyond what you're doing now. Well, and, of course, you have to incorporate the new requirements. Like if you're not currently using a consumer-directed model, make sure you roll that in. But for those states that have current projects, you don't have to start from scratch. You can build and expand. That can mean expanding to another population, expanding into a larger geographic areas. You know, maybe now you're working in 5 counties, and in the new proposal, you propose 2 additional counties, et cetera, like that. Then I got to go back. Resource Center. The other thing I wanted to say is that Meredith's been working on getting some materials posted on our on the AOA's Alzheimer's Resource Room website. And these materials will all be added to the under professionals and providers on the Alzheimer's Resource Room, which is www.aoa.gov/ALZ. Under the section, it's called Professionals and Providers, and then there's a subsection for the ADDGS National Resource Center. There are some project planning tools we're adding, such as we have information from Minnesota about how they've trained, they've worked with their ADRC in training staff. We have a guidebook and a fact sheet on self-directed care that comes from Georgia. And we have information from D.C. about providing Montessori activities for people with dementia in adult daycare settings. Plus, we have 2 documents from our current Nebraska grant about the benefits of consumer-directed services for caregivers of people with dementia. And that's just about, I don't know, a half or a third of what we're putting under the project planning tools area. Also, in another area on the same section under the Resource Center, we're updating. We're adding some of the REACH 2. REACH is resources for enhancing Alzheimer's caregiver health. This is the second of an NIA-funded evidence-based program. On our website, we call it Programs That Work, which is what I call evidence-based projects. And I think we're adding about 3 or 4 links to information on REACH 2, if that's helpful to you. So I think all in all, we're probably adding about 20 documents or resources, and they should all be up by Friday. Meredith's working with our web people. But if you're interested in any of these or you have trouble finding them or finding our website, just give Meredith a call, and she'd be happy to help you out because I checked with her ahead of time. Okay, then, see, that's where I got sidetracked. If you have a grant, I got it. One thing. If you already have a grant and you're going to build on what you're doing now, I really encourage you to state in your narrative briefly, you know, what you've done and how you're going to expand or build on it. Again, if you're targeting additional populations or if you're expanding into new counties or regions, and if you're just or maybe expanding the scope of services. Now, I was thinking if you're going to expand, like say maybe now you offer one or two things and you want to expand to have a larger menu of services, maybe three or four or five, you know, then you might want to clarify why this is. You know, we found this was really helpful, but we found what people were really lacking was something else, and we want to bring that in. That's okay, too. Let me think. Hold on. That's about it. And the reason I encourage you to don't be ashamed to say you've had a grant before and what you've done and that you're building on it, because the grant reviewers, they only know what you tell them. They don't have any background information on any previous projects except for maybe what they know. But in terms of how they're rating your project, it's strictly based on what they're reading, and it's a standalone piece. But I do know in the past, you know, sometimes a grant reviewer will be like, well, I thought they did this before. And what I found from listening to that conversation was the belief that it would be helpful to say, even just in a couple, we did this, and now we're going to add this and do that. I know it's a limited space, so you don't have to spend a lot of time or elaboration on it, but it kind of gets that little question out of their head, which can interfere. Though it didn't cause any scoring changes, but it does make the reviewers take, you know, it creates more questions. So, you know, maybe a paragraph, maybe two, you know, just reference what you've done so that the reviewers can have a context to know why you're going where you're going. And then really just the last thing in my notes was to say about the grant review process. We will be holding an on-site panel review towards the end of May. Each panel will consist of three people. They will all have knowledge and background in Alzheimer's disease, plus other areas like delivering home and community-based services or evaluation. And in terms of the reviewers, I always say remember to look before you submit your proposal or now or whenever. Remember to look at the questions the reviewers will be scoring your proposal on. Most of the questions have stayed pretty much the same, but there have been a few little changes this year. And, of course, with the data, we've added 4 points, I believe it is, for the data element, for the data collection. Let's see. And I'm looking at the questions. We have... specifically included a question such as, does it include a plan for collaborating with an aging and disability resource center operating in the state, linking to programs and services such as the National Family Caregiver Support Program, et cetera? Does the applicant have adequate data collection and reporting capacity? And that relates back to the data we're going to be requiring. And there is a 10-point question about the delivery of the direct services and whether or not some of that includes the consumer-directed model. So just always encourage you to kind of look those over, and while you're thumbing through the whole proposal, just to add one more thing to the things to remember, you know, check and see if you feel you've answered the questions that they're going to be scoring you on. And I think that's all that's in my head at the moment. So if you'd like, I can try to answer questions.
Lori, can I just make a few comments?
Yes. Or Diane, you go.
All right, thanks. I just wanted to mention that, you know, as someone who's reviewed a lot of grants and so forth, I would just encourage people to you know, find the best grant writer you can find. You can have a great idea, but unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that better written proposals tend to get funded more. So I would just throw that out as my first comment. My second thing is, Lori, and I ask you to jump in here, mm-hmm. which is the idea on the requirement about the citing the evidence-based practices.
Mm-hmm.
My read of that, which may be different than yours, is that people can cite evidence-based practices beyond the ones listed in the program announcement.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I just wanted to make clear about that, if it's in a journal or so forth, you know, something you know about or going on, that would be acceptable.
Absolutely.
The other two things I want to point out that I just particularly find exciting are on page 2. The first thing Lori so kindly put in there was that you can use these to coordinate the development of diagnostic and treatment services and care services. So I think that's kind of exciting in terms of a lot of the recent work we've been doing in physician outreach and so forth in the health area. So I think that's, you know, really good. And also, if I'm not mistaken, I don't exactly know on what page, but Lori, didn't you put in here someplace also that just a reminder that this particular program is to serve people with Alzheimer's of all ages?
Or other dementias or related.
Or other dementias.
And it's under Section 3, Eligibility Information, Sub-Item 3, Other, page
That's
7
okay.
on mine.
That's okay.
Yes,
but
thanks, Lori.
Yes, but it serves, you know, people with all kinds of dementias under 60 and their caregivers, correct?
Yes. So
terrific.
Whether if a person has early onset, if it's a person with intellectual developmental disorders, if the person with dementia is over 60 but the caregiver is 50, that's fine. You can still serve them both. There's no age restrictions on either member of the unit.
And then, Lori, my last question is, somehow I remember maybe in the last year or two, you put together, I believe, or maybe Arthur Miller did when he was here, a lovely handout on grants.gov.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if, you know, if people contacted you, if you might be able to send that out to them again, if they're not familiar with it.
That's actually on the AOA website.
Okay, great.
Under the grants opportunities, let me see. There's a under AOA grant, on AOA.gov, there's a heading called AOA Grant Programs, and then a subheading called grants.gov.
Okay.
But you know what? I don't, hold on, because AOA procedures for grants, I'm sorry, that document
uh-huh.
is actually on the AOA grants program. It's called, it's a direct link you go to AOA procedures for grants under AOA grants program, and it'll give you all the AOA procedures for grants.gov.
Great, thank you.
Send that out, or I can give you the link. Absolutely. Or call Meredith or somebody, and we'll get you to it.
Okay, I think at this time we would, as Lori prompted, like to open the floor to questions for Lori specifically, if you have questions about technical assistance, to Diane.
Lori, this is Cliff and Leslie from Georgia.
Hi, guys.
Hi there.
Thank you.
We wondered not to... make too fine a point. You mentioned in terms of the 1 year,
mm-hmm.
it was only guaranteed for funding for 1 year.
Correct.
And then you mentioned there was no option for a 3-year project. Is that a possibility of changing from 1 to more years?
At this time, I would recommend planning for a 1-year project. I cannot foresee the future.
Lori?
Yes?
This is Carissa in North Carolina. I just had a couple small questions. On the attachment E of the RFP, when it gives you a sample abstract,
mm-hmm.
I got really excited when it said no more than 265 words. I just wondered if we were going to use the 265 limit or in the body of the RFP, the old limit was 180.
Don't say that in the body?
In the body it says 180. And in the abstract it says 265. And it's a little thing, but it makes a big difference when you're trying to write an abstract. So I was wondering if we could go with the higher one or if you had...
I would say, because we used a template, that A, we need to let them, the people who create the template for those things, know they don't match up. And then B, that if it says somewhere 265 words, then that is within your right, because that is what we have said.
All right, thank you. It's on page 11 where it says 180, and it's page 39.
For the got
265.
It.
But that was just a little thing. The other thing is just to clarify, from what I understand, anything that's in the appendix of your proposal is not counted in the 20-page maximum. And if that's correct, if there's anything in the appendix that we need to include that can't be sent electronically, and I'm just wondering with the timing of that, and if we sent our electronic grant application in, a week before the deadline.
Well,
appendix materials, if most of them can be sent electronically, but then if, one or two.
I thought there was a way to indicate on grants.gov that hard copies were coming. What I would do is, I'd hate to cut you short even more. There are appendices. I'm going to double check that. Appendices, hard copy. But I would like to say that if you sent them via overnight, if you submitted your electronic on the 14th, make a note that there are some non-electronic appendices being sent.
As long as the post date is in line with the deadline.
And but I would send them overnight, not U.S. mail.
Sure.
Though I can't require it in this case. If we don't have them by, because it's my understanding that we'll be sending the packages to the reviewers on May 16th.
Okay.
So if we don't have appendices that, for whatever reason, are not in electronic form, they'll be downloading all day on the 15th to send to the reviewers on the 16th. So I would say you want to make sure, the 14th would be great, but no later than the 15th. So this is a situation where I can never require, but if you send it U.S. mail, it may never get attached.
Sure, sure. No, thank you.
You're welcome. Anyone else?
Lori, I have a question.
Okay.
Yes, it is. About the requirement of one half of the federal funds must be used for direct services.
Mm-hmm.
I know that was, I guess the question is, if you want to use state funds instead, is that okay to meet the direct service
question.
Requirement?
It's the equivalent.
Okay.
So if you get a $300,000 grant,
right,
from us, and which would make your match $100,000 in this first year, which is the bottom line is if you receive $300,000 of federal funds, we mm-hmm. would expect to see $150,000 go towards direct service. If it comes out of state money, that's fine, but it's the dollar amount.
Okay.
I guess it should say the equivalent of.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Lori, this is Patty Clark.
Hi, Patty.
Hi. I had noticed on page 10 where it describes the narrative and the different components.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that is missing there, which I see later on, is the data collection.
Uh-huh.
Page 13, it describes you have to mention your data collection in the narrative.
Oh, bad, Lori. Let me go back and forth. Mm-hmm. All the people who looked at that, we missed it. Well, it should have been shown on page 10, and I hate to say it, but I would write it in there right now on the project narrative piece so it doesn't get forgotten, and then use the paragraph where we go into the section when we go into more detail about the project narrative to use that data collection information. Because we're providing the data collection elements and et cetera, I don't know how long a piece that would need to be, but it should definitely be addressed. Absolutely, it's a 4-point grant reviewer question. But just that, I would think at a minimum that that you are aware and have a plan. Again, we're kind of in this gray area with it. And I'm not used to gray areas like this. So use the detail.
Okay.
And make sure you reference it. Otherwise, you'll lose 4 points or you know, the reviewers will wonder, and you don't want that.
If it's something as simple as a statement saying that we're going to comply with the data collection requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be anything lengthy, because at this point none of you can know how we're setting it up because we haven't done that yet, right? I mean, but that you're, yes, that you're comply and that it'll begin with the first clients, and that, you know, you're aware it's a, you know, a requirement, and that the data will be submitted annually or stuff like that.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry about that.
Lori, this is Bill Peterson in Virginia.
Hi, Bill.
Can you talk more about data collection? I know you haven't gotten there yet and what your final plans are going to be, but are you thinking that you're going to collect data on the that portion of the grant where we're providing direct services? Is it going to be broader than that, do you think?
Well, if you look at the attachments, the first that are included with that attachment, whatever letter we got up to there, was it F or something? What is the data? Attachment G. There's an Excel spreadsheet, an Excel file that has 4 worksheets in it, and it shows that we're looking for characteristics of the primary caregiver, characteristics of the person with dementia. But the third worksheet, which I believe is called Services Expenditures or some shortened version thereof, is really focused on the 6 direct services. Yes. Those pieces are required that incorporate the direct services. And then there's optional information if you want to, for your own purposes and or to give more information to us, but track, you know, information and referrals, mental health services, case management, you know, different types of outreach and training and et cetera. So it is focusing on direct services, but with the optional piece, it could be more. But I would say the focus is on the direct service.
Right. Thanks, Laura.
You're welcome.
This is Abba with North Carolina, and I have a question regarding outcomes and writing the evaluation plans.
Okay.
In your outcomes section, you mentioned that that the grants clearly need to identify measurable outcomes that will result from the project.
Yes.
Now, when we write the evaluation plan, do we have to write a way of tracking those outcomes? That is my first question. And secondly, is a report related to the outcomes a deliverable at the end of the year? And a third question is that realistic to expect outcomes by the end of the first year of implementation?
Good question. Hold on. Okay, I'll try to back, try to, you may have to refresh me. But in terms of the plan for, the outcome is, an outcome and evaluation. The outcome can be one thing. The outcome, you can track it or not track it. I mean, you need to track it, but I mean, you can say, yes, we've increased services in this, you know, we've served people in this area. In terms of an outcome report, are we requiring an outcome report? Usually people will identify in their semi-annual report how their project is going, which generally incorporates that measurable outcome. With a one-year project versus a three-year project, is it realistic? Maybe, maybe not. But the thing is that we're not, because of one-year versus three-year, just with any program in the first, when we have our three-year projects, in the first year, your expectations for outcome success are different than by the third year. So we wouldn't have the same expectations for how far you've gone in the course of 1 year and on a one-year project. So it's realistic in the sense that we know it's a one-year project and there's only so much that can be accomplished in 1 year.
So in the evaluation plan, if we just include how a plan about how we will measure the indicators that you've indicated in your Excel sheets, we should be fine. Is that correct?
I think so.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyone else?
Lori?
Huh?
Lori, this is Janice. I couldn't find it in here. Do we have to get a letter from the governor for this?
No more.
Okay, good.
But what that does mean is used to be there was a required letter from the governor and only one application permitted per state. There is a potential that there could be more than one application from a state. I hope not, but only one program will be funded in
okay.
each state. Anyone? Anyone? How y'all doing?
Does anybody else have more questions? No question too large or too small.
Nothing but time.
Everybody stay healthy and don't plan any vacations. This is Cliff.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I knew you guys were all just sitting around with nothing to do, so I decided.
Hi, Lori.
No, really. Any other questions or is everybody okay for now? Okay for now?
Good.
Okay, well, you
Lori, do you want to give out the phone numbers one more time for you and Meredith and for the Resource Center?
Yes, I do. So what I was going to say was please don't hesitate to contact me or Meredith or the Resource Center, depending on the area. If you're, again, I'm, well, and if I think, if you call me and I think it's the Resource Center, I'll connect you over. And if you call the Resource Center and they think it's my bailiwick, they'll put you back my way. So my direct phone number is 202-357-3452. Meredith's direct phone number is 202-357-0149. And then the main number for the Resource Center, and as Diane said, if you could just indicate that you're calling for TA on the Alzheimer's demonstration grant, that will help them connect you to the right people. The main number is 202-393-7737.
And just to be clear, don't be surprised. That number picks up and people say Alzheimer's Association.
Yeah,
so that's why you need to say you have a question for the TA Center.
And
thank you.
The
what was that number again?
202-393-7737. 7737.
Thanks.
And I, you know, do hope you'll try to look at the website or contact Meredith if you have interest in the things we're posting. And the thing I want to say to everyone is that there is no question too small. There is no question too simple. There is no question you should be afraid to contact someone and ask. If you're not sure, call me, call someone, and ask.
Lori, this is Kevin in Pennsylvania. I just thought of a quick question, though.
Sure.
The work, it mentions the travel, the workshop in September and the conference in November.
Yes, sir.
Are there any tentative dates yet for that?
I'm looking at the first week of November for the annual grantees meeting because I'm hoping to hook up with the ADRC grantees meeting.
Right.
So at this point, Greg Case, who oversees the ADRC program with Joe and Leslie, we've both blocked off that first week.
Okay, that's fine.
The tentative, although really I don't want to say more of that, dates for the other meetings would be we're hoping to have a meeting in Houston for the people for the Western grantees beginning Sunday, September 9th, and going to the 10th and half a day on the 11th. And if we're lucky, then we will get the second meeting for the Eastern grantees in Chicago beginning again on Sunday, the 23rd of September, running to the 24th and half a day on the 25th.
Okay.
So you would be in Chicago. Because we do try to keep it east and west.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. All righty.
Is
okay.
It, what's the cutoff for east and west, Lori?
It's
the river.
River. It seemed like a, you know.
What was the cutoff?
The Mississippi River.
The Mississippi River. Okay, thank you.
It's east of the Mississippi and west of the Mississippi. We believe we found out apparently crossing the Mississippi can impact your travel costs.
Ah.
So we use the river to divide in terms of hubs and transfers and that sort of thing. We hope, well, one, it makes for smaller groups, and two, we hope it makes for easier travel. That's our intent. All righty, well, we're doing this again on Thursday at 1:30, I think.
Correct, and we will be sending out, as I mentioned at the beginning of this call, a corrected notice. So if you had identified partners or other people in the state that you'd like to listen in on these calls, we will be sending out a correction notice for you all to forward on to your friends and colleagues. In addition, these calls, both calls on Tuesday and Thursday, are being recorded, so you'll be able to hopefully by next week be able to listen to these calls once again if you have any questions or if you'd like to share the call-in information for the recording with project partners.
And actually, if I can just cut in for a second, on the front page of the Alzheimer's Resource Room down at the bottom, there's a What's New section where we currently have the program announcement information posted. We will be putting a link there to the recording. So once
terrific.
They're posted, you just go to our homepage, www.aoa.gov/ALZ, and scroll down to the What's New section, and you'll be able to link right over to where the teleconferences are so you don't have to worry about wondering how to find them. And a good way to check and see if they're there, if there are some people who you would like who haven't been able to make the calls and et cetera, or you just want to check back. Okay?
Thank you, Lori and Diane and Meredith, for all the hard work that you've done thus far and for what you're going to be doing in the next few weeks to help the grantees. And we look forward to everybody's success in getting your stuff in by May 14th.
Monday, May 14th. Exactly. Thank you, everybody.
And good luck.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. Don't hesitate to contact us, please.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.